Gen Z women are going to change the world. They might even save it, despite the shitty cards we dealt them. I'm admittedly biased because I live with two of them, but our data says it too. Today's teen girls and 20-something women have levels of maturity, empathy, courage, emotional well-being, and even financial acumen that I couldn't imagine having when I was their age. Young men, meanwhile, seem somewhat lost. They're not applying to college, not dating, or even making friends like they did a generation ago. They need to figure themselves out before we can ask them to figure out much else. So, per usual, the women are stepping up. Make a list of the most influential cultural icons in America over the past year, and it's all women at the top. You'll start with names like Taylor Swift and Greta Gerwig, and more recently, Caitlin Clark. And while Swift and Gerwig aren't Gen Zs themselves, the consumers buying tickets for their shows and movies very much are. And it's not just entertainment and sports. Young women are changing entire categories of retail. Take beauty and cosmetics, for example. Women, particularly Gen Z women, have decided that beauty is a gesture of self-care, and they're willing to spend their money on it. Economic headwinds be damned. The smartest person in the room with me today is Corey Marchisotto, the trailblazing chief marketing officer of e.l.f. Beauty. By combining affordable, prestige-quality products with an unmatched mastery of social media marketing, e.l.f. has been the number one, undisputed, fastest-growing company on the New York Stock Exchange for the past 5 years. Corey and I talked about e.l.f.'s meteoric rise and how she's positioned the company at the epicenter of America's biggest cultural trends, from the explosion of TikTok to the growing dominance of women in sports to partnerships with the hottest brands and celebrities. She espouses the virtues of taking calculated risks and failing fast. We also talked about our shared addiction to caffeine, our shared aversion to movie musicals, and how to construct the perfect bite of food. So sit back, check your conventional wisdom at the door, and meet Corey with me, the dumbest guy in the room. Corey, my hero, where do I find you today?
You find me today in my office in Oakland, California, an unlikely place for one of the top performing beauty companies in the industry, for sure.
Well, so perfect lead in. You joined e.l.f. 5 or so years ago. Since that time, the company's had bigger stock market gains than NVIDIA, which is probably a little fact not a lot of people know because NVIDIA gets a lot of attention right now. But you blew away your Wall Street estimates again in your most recent quarter, improved your guidance yet again. What kind of ride is that like?
You know, there's not enough superlatives to describe it. And very oftentimes, you know, you and I have talked about when we do research and we create those little boxes and you can only tick one box that says this is the thing that's true. And in this particular case, tick all the boxes because they're all true. Remarkable, extraordinary, exceptional, emotional, you know, you name it. That's really how the ride has felt, quite honestly. And in 5 years, we have done what most companies will never do in their lifetime. So probably above all else, I feel privileged and honored to be on this rocket ship to places that nobody's ever been before.
Well, you deserve no shortage of credit for it. So I know your background, but for the sake of our listeners, it'd be cool to hear just a little bit about your journey into this place. I'd love to also hear about the transition from the many years you spent in the luxury world of retail and fashion, and what were some of the biggest differences transitioning from that experience to this current experience? And maybe what were the lessons you brought with you that maybe were new to a brand like e.l.f., but you felt like really translated? What didn't? But maybe just a little bit more about your background first.
Sure. So it all started in East Meadow on Long Island, a small little unassuming town where I grew up. And I always had a strong magnetic pull to Manhattan. My dad had taken me there at a young age to show me the power of the melting pot and all of these different ideas, languages, people, colors, tones, shapes, sizes, all coming together to create this extraordinary place of electric energy. So I always felt this magnetic pull toward Manhattan and everything it had to offer. And I think that says a lot about my energy field. And I had this dream that I was going to be a businesswoman in finance. And so I chose Pace University which is where I went to college because they had a very strong affiliation with all of the big financial institutions. And my senior year, I wanted to have an internship so that when I graduated, I'd have a leg up because I would have already had this incredible experience in a giant financial institution. So I went out interviewing. And I felt in that moment that all my dreams were being shattered because I did not feel the connection to the space that I was hoping to. I found it cold, sterile, and lacking in the type of energy and dynamic that I was normally drawn to. So I found myself in this very strange crossroads of, I spent my whole life leading toward this moment, and this moment certainly doesn't feel like this thing that I always dreamed it would be. And at that moment, my dad called me and said that Debbie Nuzzo, who at the time was the vice president of sales at LVMH, was looking for somebody to fill in on a maternity leave. And it could be this great opportunity for me to get my foot in a door in a different kind of company. And I'm sure you can appreciate this as a 20-year-old at the time. I was like, I don't need your help, Dad. You know, don't even try to help me. I could do this all by myself. And after a couple of more cold, sterile interviews, I took his advice and gave Debbie Nuzzo a call. And their offices were at Park Avenue at the time. And that was already just this dramatic change. I went up to their office and the elevator door opened and it was all black lacquer and mirror and it was sexy AF. And this beautiful woman at the front desk wearing red lipstick, you know, snow white look, red cheeks, short, severe haircut, answered the phone as I was walking in with a heavy French accent. She said, "Jean Givenchy." And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what this place is, but this is it. Like my antenna was just going off like crazy. And that was my entrance into the beauty space. And I never left. And probably what I've loved most about this industry is it's about dreams. It's about emotions. It's about human connection on a very deep level in a way that I don't think any other industries, quite honestly, have that level of depth and humanity. So I spent the first 28 years in my career in luxury, working for many French luxury brands. I have a very strong affinity for all things French luxury and sophistication. And I grew up on that side of the house. And I realized, you know, after a decade into it, that the work that I was doing was talking to the happy few. How many people can really afford a $175 Hermès fragrance or a $50 lipstick? So you do this really extraordinary work. And while it's a beautiful business and incredibly aspirational, it's really only speaking to a small amount of the population. So I always imagined, well, what would happen if I was able to bring this type of work and energy to the masses? And when you think about the fact that two-thirds of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, there's really an exceptional white space to be delivering the kind of luxury and prestige codes, cues, and quality that I learned in the prestige space and bring it to the masses. So I had that sort of arc in my mind about at some point I wanted to open the aperture to a much wider audience. So when I got the Elf phone call, there were a couple of things that were obvious for me. The first one was that this was a brand that was not built from the top down. It was built from the bottom up. And that was something that I was really interested in. It was also this very unique unicorn in Oakland, California, when I grew up on the New York City beauty scene, that was really a Silicon Valley startup feel. It didn't feel like a beauty company. It still doesn't. It's really a much more like a tech startup than it is like a beauty company in so many ways. And I was able to really align all of the things that I learned across my journey on these incredible brands that had these, you know, amazing dimensions. So if I just walk you through that, because you asked me how I translated this into the space I'm in, I think you're going to find this pretty obvious. I grew up working on Jean-Paul Gaultier, who's the ultimate bad boy and anti-conformist. And his mantra was, and why not? So everybody would ask why, he would ask, and why not? So I really learned about the rebellious spirit. I worked on Issey Miyake, who's a true innovator's innovator, and he taught me how to spend time with things I don't know and to lead with an infinite curiosity. I worked on Narciso Rodriguez, which was all about rigor and discipline. So I was able to take a curiosity, a rebellious spirit, and attach rigor around it. When I worked at Burberry, I learned about the power of digital domination. Every morning we woke up and we asked ourselves, how can we penetrate the digital space? And then I finished my luxury tour at Bare Minerals, which was the first social media brand before social media was social media. The founder had really created the ultimate one-on-one connection and scaled it. So if you think about all of those building blocks, that's what I was able to bring to ELF, is this spirit of disrupting norms, of leading with infinite curiosity to take you into experimentation, discovery, test and learn, in bringing a rigor and discipline around how to expand the digital ecosystem and open the aperture into the social media gates. So I think there's a tremendous amount of learning that you get working on visionary designers that you can bring to spaces that they don't normally go. And I think the other part is taking luxury and bringing it to the masses. So ELF prides itself on producing prestige quality products at jaw-dropping value. And who better than somebody with a luxury background than to bring those colors, codes, cues, and all of the things that luxury brings and take it to the spaces that it normally doesn't translate.
Well, I had not heard you tell that story before, tying those things together, but it does explain a lot of, I mean, I'm following you through that story and like, yes, that's part of ELF and part of ELF and part of ELF. It's pretty magical how you've brought all that together. So in 5 years, that means you started a year or so before the pandemic, right? So just getting your feet underneath you probably. And then we have this once in a lifetime event comes along. There's countless number of things people have proven to be wrong about leading into that pandemic and since. But one of which was that the conventional wisdom was when everybody was stuck at home and no longer in person, that the beauty category would be the one that would get hit the hardest or among the hardest. And the exact opposite has turned out to be true, which again shows you how much people like me and economists and the like are can be full of it, I guess. But one of the big things that's really happened that the category has in some ways benefited from, but I would say in more ways actually has driven. And I had Dave Kimball from Ulta on the podcast last season, and this topic came up, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, which is how kind of beauty has kind of become as much of a wellness category as it has a fashion category, particularly for young women. How do you think about the role your brand plays through that lens as it relates to your customers' lives and mental well-being, mental health? How does that factor into the relationship you're building with your customers?
So I think for ELF, what's really fundamental is we are our community. And I like to say that ELF is a brand of the people, by the people, for the people, created with the people. And there is an enormous emotional connection to the community recognizing that this is not our brand, it's there, and we're here to shape it for them. When you actually listen to your community and action the things they're telling you, they speak to you even more. In capital letters with exclamation points and start making demands, which is where we are now. And we love every second of it. So I actually think ELF is a different kind of beauty brand and a different kind of company, period. Not many CMOs read thousands of comments every week to have their finger on the pulse and really understand the energy that their community is operating in, right? They have a relationship with reports. I have a relationship with people, and I'm here to be the steward of what the people want. And think about how emotionally connected you have to be to your community for that to be true. I bring them to every room, whether it's the boardroom or the executive table or every decision-making table, they have a seat and they know it. So if you think about that emotional connection, now take yourself into a period like COVID, where they know that ELF brings a certain value to their life. And that value is we've taken down the velvet ropes and we leave that to everybody else. You have a seat at our table and you're invited to our party every single day. And during that moment, we ask them, We said, we don't want to make assumptions about what you want to see or hear from us at this time. We want to give you exactly what it is that you need. And what they told us is, we need you, Elf. You bring us positivity. You bring us inclusivity. You bring us accessibility. Please don't stop doing what you're doing. And the incredible thing about that moment is most companies were trying to figure out how to operate during COVID. We were already hybrid. We already knew how to operate in a hybrid environment. So for us, going from one day being partially in an office and operating across multiple time zones and countries to, oh, just do that from home, was really easy for us. It was like a light switch. So we never turned off our innovation pipelines. We never turned off any of our communication channels with our audience. And I think that actually connected them to us even more deeply and us to them even more deeply. And we had honest conversations. We knew that they were very upset that they couldn't go to their prom. So we got together with Chipotle and created a digital prom for them and sent them kits to get ready for their virtual proms. And if you think about what I'm saying, right, we're not talking about selling product. We're talking about a place that people belong to, a place that they're invited to, a place that hears them and acts on their unique needs, wants, and desires. And what we certainly realized way earlier, I think, than most others, is this is a very emotional connection, that beauty is not just about buying a product or delivering a practical, functional benefit. Beauty is fulfilling a very deep emotional need. And that's where the blurry lines come in with, is it beauty? Is it wellness? It's all true. So again, go back to, I don't have to tick one box. It's all true. And one of the things that I saw very early on when I got to Elf, the first thing I wanted to do was really understand not what our employees loved about our brand or what our employees thought the brand was about. And don't get me wrong, that was really important, was to really understand what our community loved most about our brand. What did they identify as the superpowers? What were they deeply connected to? And I read hundreds of letters that were this incredible outpouring of, hey, Elf, I was in college, you know, couch diving for change, and I couldn't afford anything. I couldn't even afford to feed myself, but you had a dollar brush and a $2 eyeshadow palette, and that made me feel good that I could go out and face the world. And I realized very early on that this brand is not about the product we're selling. It's about the access to a world that people were shut out of before, that I can get, you know, high quality beauty and look the way I want to look and express myself the way I want to express myself. And I don't have to give up food or some other thing in my life to be able to do it. So what we've been able to do for people is really tap into an emotional need in addition to a functional benefit. And when you understand the power of that, it takes you in all sorts of different directions. So if you think about the content we create around the products that we sell, we are tapping again into those unique needs, wants, and desires. People wanted longer form content from us. They wanted to be entertained. They wanted to be engaged in a playful, humorous way. When so many people approach beauty as this very serious category, Elf was making everybody laugh and dance and sing and have a good time. So I think the short answer to your question is, beauty is not one box to check, it's all of them. And when you understand where is the intersection between what it is your community wants and what it is that you are great at and the ethos of your brand, you can actually create a more powerful dimension than you ever imagined possible.
So to be community-led, there's obviously some boundaries to that as well, right? It's not necessarily democracy. You let people vote on whether you should, well, maybe you do, to gamify some things, I suppose. But there's sort of, at one end of the spectrum would be, truly, we're just going to build exactly the things or make the things that people ask us for. You can't do that for everyone, obviously, because there'll be outliers with terrible ideas. And of course, you have to screen those. At the other end, I think, which is way more common in categories like yours, probably 8 or so years ago, we met with a very famous fashion brand whose the name of the brand was the name of the person who started the company and designed all of the apparel, a name everybody would know. And we went in to kind of talk to them about what we did. And they said, well, we don't really use data here. We make what so-and-so dreams up. And we'll sometimes, you know, use data to validate so-and-so's idea, but they just weren't kind of an insights-led company. And there's a lot of that in fashion and apparel because it's sort of the inspiration and the idea. So in addition to the community feedback that you incorporate into your strategy, a lot of it's data. You guys are kind of decidedly the opposite of that story, right? It's not just some artists create some idea in a lab and you're going to chase it until it dies, right? I don't want to say you're not idea led, but maybe you would put it that way. What's fascinated us the most, full disclosure to everyone listening, we do work with ELF and love to do that. And I'm constantly impressed with sort of how insights oriented the company is. Talk about the origins of that, examples of how that's played itself out as it's fed to your success. It's obviously a little bit self-serving for us, I'll readily admit, but I know it's a key part of your strategy. So tell us more about that.
You have to go back to day one, which is the genesis of the company, which was built on an insight and a white space. And most of what we do today is still built on the principles of our founders, who were two entrepreneurs, a father-son duo, who were looking to create a business together. And true entrepreneurs have a hunger for white space opportunities. And they were at a dollar store and they recognized that there were expensive cars outside the dollar store. And it already broke the myth that they had in their mind that a dollar store was for a low-income shopper. It's actually for a smart shopper who's looking for a smart beauty score. So they went inside the aisles and asked themselves, like, what can't they find here? Is there a gap that we could potentially create a business to fill? And the gap that they saw was you could pretty much get anything at a dollar store, but you could not at the time, this was 2004, get premium quality cosmetics. And they asked themselves, why not? What if we could create premium quality cosmetics and sell it for $1 over the internet? Remember, 2004, the iPhone doesn't exist, and it's the year that Facebook launches. So this was an earthquake under the beauty industry, and everybody said it couldn't be done. There is no way you could create premium quality cosmetics and sell them for a dollar. Not possible. Two, you can't sell color cosmetics over the internet. Not possible. And three, even if you figured out how to do one and two, you could never make that a profitable business. So when you think about that premise, ELF was born to disrupt. ELF was lightning in a bottle from day one, creating a storm in everybody's sky. And it was an insight-led approach. And we've carried that through. And there's so many things from our founders that we carry through. The renegade spirit, the bias for action, the agility, everything that an entrepreneurship is, we still are, despite the fact that we're now a $1 billion brand. So the key component is starting with an insight. I actually think all decision-making has to have three parts to it, or there's three facets. There's art, there's science, and there's gut instinct. So the science will give you the data points, and that's absolutely fundamental. You need the data points to understand, and our head of insights, Jessica Silla, will tell you you need to triangulate every data point, so she makes sure she does the triangulation. The art is, well, how do I blend that with the ethos of my brand, the unique needs, wants, and desires of the communities I serve, and how do I translate the qualitative aspects with the quantitative aspects? And then the third part, which is my personal favorite, is the gut instinct, because sometimes data will tell you to go left, but your gut says, nope, that's definitely not the right path, go right. So you have to trust your gut as what I call the manual override switch. And your gut comes from a ladder of experiences. And I stand on a ladder of 25 years of experiences in this space. So sometimes I don't think the data is pointing us in the right direction. And sometimes the data is a starting point that allows us to find a new signal that maybe we weren't looking for. And I think that's what happens a lot at ELF. So let me just run this through the pipes for you to give you an idea. And, you know, everybody likes to talk about how ELF showed up at the Super Bowl. So I think that's a really good place to put this out for you. We had a couple of different data sets. The first one was, and we're very competitive, I'm very competitive, that we had the second highest selling SKU in all of mass cosmetics, which was Power Grip Primer. And for a primer to be number two is extraordinary because it's a category 13, meaning it's the 13th smallest category in the business. So how could a primer possibly be number two? And our head of insights called me up and said, you know, we're number two. Could you believe it? So my first question was, well, how far are we from number one? And she said, one marketing activation the size of e.l.f. and we could have the number one SKU in all of mass cosmetics. So I was really tickled by this. And then the other thing we're always looking for is, where is beauty or where are women underserved? So I looked at all the data points behind the big game and found that 115 million viewers at that time, 75% of them claimed that the most enjoyment they got out of the game was the commercials. So you have a high, you know, a high affinity to actually watch and consume your commercial. And the most important stat for me was half of those people were women. So I said, okay, well, what are the commercials being served? Because I watch the Super Bowl every year and I don't feel like anybody's talking to me. I think they're talking about beer and snacks and cars. And so we looked under the hood and less than 1% of the commercials were beauty focused, despite the fact that half the audience was women. So we put all of those signals together, right? We know that Power Grip Primer is this beauty superstar and has the potential to break every record ever. We know that there's a place that women are being underserved. Well, what if we were able to find a unique disruptive approach to come into that space and make sure that we can, you know, not only serve the underserved, but doing it in a very entertaining and culturally relevant way? And that, let's just say, created another earthquake and broke every metric and every record and raised the floor of our business. We have doubled our unaided brand awareness in the last 3 years, the most of which came directly after the Super Bowl. So the insight worked, the collection of insights worked. And the way that I like to talk about this is insights are stars. What's important is making the constellation. The constellation is fundamental. The constellation we made was taking Power Grip Primer to the big game because women were being underserved and doing it in a way that was entertaining and culturally relevant. And once we had that constellation, then we press play on tape.
Well, we've been very outspoken for the last few months about the appeal of women sports fans, particularly in the wake of the recent Women's March Madness and the Olympics coming this summer. That is an untapped goldmine. Glad to see that you've tapped it. Hopefully it's part of your plans going forward to continue to tap that goldmine because it shows no signs of slowing. For the people who might not be as familiar with your brand, I asked my daughter, my 17-year-old daughter, this probably a month ago. For unrelated reasons, I asked her what brands she felt did the best on TikTok, essentially had the best engagement. And she immediately mentioned two names. One was Duolingo, who coincidentally happens to be right across the street from our office in Pittsburgh. And the other one was e.l.f. Unprompted, not knowing I knew you or anything about any of this. There's this perception of what happens on TikTok. And I would say with a lot of like influencer-led kind of social media, it's called Instagram, wherever else, that a lot of times it's kind of lightning in a bottle, right? Did you happen to stumble upon the right viral thing? And, you know, and we also see some of these influencers come and go, right? They'll build up their millions of followers on some silly video they did and they can't do the second one and it falls apart. You have been sustainably successful on that platform in a way that, again, unaided awareness from my 17-year-old, that was the one of the first two companies she mentioned. What works for you there? What lessons are there to be taken from your experience and your success there that obviously, you know, if everybody could replicate it, they would, but what have you learned from it? What's been the magic, the secret sauce?
I love that question because I think what's most important is to create a recipe that you can replicate. And that recipe, quite honestly, the magic formula of e.l.f. we use across everything, whether it's TikTok or any other place in the digital ecosystem or any of our campaigns or any of the work we do. And the starting point, you're not going to be surprised, is tune the e.l.f. in. And tune the e.l.f. in means find the signals. What are the signals telling you? And in this particular case, if I go back to 2019, when we were the early adopter and the first lightning in a bottle, we've had many lightnings in a bottle since then, you know, we asked ourselves, what are people doing on this platform? Not what do we want to tell them about our brand on the platform? No, what are they doing here? What do they love here? Why are they here? What are they looking for? And it was all about music and dance, which is a lot of the reason that beauty brands were sitting it out, because they're like, well, we make beauty. What do we have to do with beauty and dance, right? It was about music. It was about self-expression. It was about being real, because at this point, Instagram, which is the curated coffee table book, was the place you would go for the perfect pictures, but here's the place I'm going to go to be more of who I am and, you know, be silly and have fun. So we asked ourselves a lot of questions about how do we find the intersection now? If we understand that about them, well, we're about self-expression also. We also knew that most people at that time, the insight we had in the house was they didn't know what ELF stood for. Some people would call it ELF. Some people would call it ELF. Some people thought we were little green creatures in the forest. Other people thought that we were Santa's helpers up in the North Pole. So I asked myself, well, how do we put these two things together? Well, what if we created an original music track and asked people to express their eyes, lips, and face? So we created the song Eyes, Lips, Face, and we did a hashtag challenge where we invited everybody to express theirs in their way, in their own unique, beautiful way. And that was the first elusive lightning in a bottle. And the reason we were able to do that is we moved from step one, which was understanding the insights and creating the constellation, to step two, which is put your head in the stars and dream what's possible. The reason other brands didn't take that journey is because they're not dreaming big enough. They're like, well, we don't do music and dance, so I guess we'll sit this out. And we're like, well, wait, what if we became a music producer? What if we brought dance to beauty? And then step three, which is absolutely fundamental, is stop dreaming about it, put your feet on the ground, and actually make it happen. Step four is make it happen at what we call ELF speed. And one of the most important parts of capturing that elusive lightning in a bottle is doing it at the speed of culture, operating in real time, not waiting for somebody to prove out some formula that may come 9 months down the road. No, make it happen and make it happen now. And the fifth and final part of that recipe is have a lot of elfing fun. This doesn't have to be so serious, everybody, right? It's beauty, it's self-expression, it's the magic of creativity. So have a good time. And we've taken that formula and we've replicated it so many times, whether it was through the creation of Eyes Lips Famous, which was a TikTok reality show. And we call that an Eyes Lips First because we were the first to do it. We created a movie at holiday called Big Mood, Big Elfing City. We've done lots of, you know, music tracks, long form content since that moment in time. And I think the most important part is we're tapped the elf in. We understand the changing dynamics of the platform. Every day is day one for us. Maybe what was true yesterday is not true today. So sometimes we're operating in the gaming space. Sometimes we're operating in the comedy space. Sometimes we're operating in the music space. And that's because people are multidimensional and entertainment, again, doesn't have to tick one box. It can tick many boxes. So probably if I had to give advice to your audience, I would say that you really have to reinvent every single day based on what is the bold truth of your brand and the bold truth of your community, and find a space that brings those two things together in an entirely new dimension.
But there has to be an appetite. Appetite's not the right word. There has to be a tolerance for failure and a willingness to fail fast to do that right. Because
absolutely.
What's the velocity of that like? So if you're really trying to stay on top of everything, you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. What kind of batting average do you look for?
Well, I think, you know, to your point, you have to have a degree of tolerance when it comes for failure. And I think every company's relationship with failure is different. And the best line that I've heard, you know, we're working with Billie Jean King. We celebrated 50 years of equal pay for equal play. We're working with her on the Professional Women's Hockey League. So I have the great benefit of spending time with Billie Jean King, and she says some really extraordinary things. And one of the things that she said, which really stuck with me, is it's not failure, it's figuring it out. And when you have that kind of relationship with failure, where you realize this is all about trial and error, it changes the way people approach their work. People are not afraid in our company to take their idea and put it into action to find the signal that's going to lead to the next giant leap. And if I think about not only TikTok, but also Twitch and Roblox, right? We had no idea how to do live streaming. We had no idea how to create a game. And we didn't let that stop us because we knew, A, there was a desire for us to be there. B, this met with our purpose. You know, we knew, for example, on Twitch that 77% of women reported being bullied on the platform and were coming in under aliases so that they didn't have to show up as women so that they could have a rightful position in the space. So we said Elf That and created a channel called Elf You, where, you know, we were inviting everybody to come to a safe space where we would have content about beauty and gaming and really shape it according to who is the audience and what do they want to hear from us. So I think the key component is you've got to be able to have your hand in a lot of different things. And then most importantly, lean into the signals as they come in real time. And I think that's where Elf probably has the biggest difference, because again, if you come back to at our core, we're renegades, we're challengers, we are nimble, we're agile, we're entrepreneurs. So, you know, one thing I do want to emphasize there is, because it's so unique, every single Elf is granted meaningful equity every single year. So we are actually a team of entrepreneurs because we're all business owners. We all have a stake in this company. So when you're in a meeting room and an idea generation session, you're not with a colleague. You're with a fellow shareholder. That changes the energy of the place when you're all owners in the outcome. And it also aligns us with shareholder and stakeholder values and principles. So inside the company, we have a fire every day in our belly to make an impact and to drive real meaningful outcomes.
We have the same policy here. We have 9 leadership principles. Number 1 is do the right thing. Number 2 is be an owner. And we do the same. It does materially change the way people approach their jobs and decisions. And you know this because I've told you this and you've heard it secondhand. I get asked when I give to speaking engagements or talk to executive teams, they all, you know, always ask me like, who's doing well? Who's doing it great? Who should we be watching? And you're always the first name I mention. And I think you just encapsulated quite a bit of it, because a lot of marketers that we work with and a lot of bigger companies we work with over-engineer their decision, not to say engineering isn't necessary. Certainly understanding the data, triangulating the data, as you mentioned, building the constellations. But it takes them so long to build something that, because they're so afraid of failure, by the time they built it, it's already the insight that they generated to build the thing's already stale. And they put it out in the wild and it still has a high frequency of failure. But that notion of sort of try fast, fail fast is a hard thing for a lot of marketers and big companies to get their head around. So great lesson for anybody listening here. I'm glad you mentioned Billie Jean King. The other person who comes to mind is Jennifer Coolidge, who you've done quite a bit of work with as well. But when people think TikTok and they think Twitch, they think young, right? Now, one of the lesser known secrets about TikTok is it's actually growing quite a bit among older demographics, like most things do. And that young audience is obviously a central part of your community. But as you look to sort of older generations, and I'll just say later generations beyond Gen Z, do you see them interacting with your brand differently or interacting on TikTok differently? Or do you find that they're more kind of adapting or adopting the same approach to those platforms as those younger people are? Or do you see like a segmentation of different by age across those platforms?
Yeah, I think it's, again, you can't tick one box.
Yeah, right.
And again, I want to come back to everything being core to our ethos. And just to comment on your last comment, and then I'll answer your question. When you really boil down a brand's truth, right? The ethos has to be the starting point for everything. So a lot of companies can't do what we do because our ethos is our ethos. Our ethos is what powers our purpose. Our purpose powers our people. Our people power the performance. And then the performance powers the series of giant leaps. So if you go down to the core of what a lot of companies are, you know, big bureaucratic institutions that are built very top down, by definition, they're never going to be able to do what ELF does because we're built in the opposite way. And core, you know, to our spirit is to be the renegades with a bias for action, not a bias for pushing paper up a flagpole for 9 months later for it to get approved, right? So I don't want your audience to think anybody could just do what ELF does. This is baked into the fabric of who we are, who we hire, how we operate, and we make sure that it translates across everything we do. Moving into the other side, but connected, is part of that ethos is capital E for every. When I came into ELF, every marketing guru, every marketing advisor, everybody on my personal board of directors told me I had to create a persona. Every textbook said the same thing. Go create a persona. Put ELF in a box. ELF is a person. She carries this handbag. She does this thing. She shops at this store. And my gut instinct was the manual override that said that is so wrong for this brand. I was reading letters from 60-year-old women, 8-year-old kids, teenagers, 20-year-olds, Gen X, and there is no one person who subscribes to what ELF does. And it's actually an enormous responsibility when you take a stand and you say ELF is for every eye, lip, and face. That is the lighthouse that guides us. So not only did we come out first ever TV campaign at the big game, talk about disrupting norms, but we came out with a woman who was over 60 when everybody thought we were a TikTok Gen Z brand. A year later, we upped the ante with Judge Judy and made the star of our show a woman who's over 80. And now we're doing incredible work with people like Billie Jean King, who's also over 80. So I think for us, we don't draw borders and boundaries, neither in geography or gender or sexual preference. We are a party for everybody every day. And what's important for us is understanding what is it that tickles you about our brand? What do you actually want from us? And how do we serve up what is going to speak to the most amount of people? Because, of course, to your point, we can't do it for everybody, but there are clear signals. So, for example, when something is very expensive in the marketplace and our audience wants access to it, they will yell at us in capital letters with exclamation points and say, ELF, we need bronzing drops. And no matter what we do, no matter what we launch, no matter what we say, they're like, ELF, please, we need bronzing drops because we know you're going to bring us a better quality product at a more affordable price, and you're going to do it in a way that we asked you for. So yesterday, actually, on the bronzing drop front, we actually have been working on it really hard since they've been begging us for it. And rather than just come out with a campaign about what do we think people want to see from bronzing drops, we actually took their comments and turned them into illustrations of how much bronzing drops mean to them. We had people make marriage proposals. ELF, I will marry you if you make me bronzing drops. ELF, I'm standing at the top of my lungs screaming for bronzing drops. ELF, I've stopped breathing until you bring me bronzing drops. And just think about the visual that brings for you. So our campaign is an actual cartoon illustration of the emotional need that they put out for this particular product. And that transcends every medium. It transcends every age. It transcends everything in the ecosystem. So we find that, you know, we're able to touch people through a variety of touch points. Some people come to us at TikTok. Some people come to us at Target. Some people come to us at Ulta. Some people come to us on Twitch. Some people come to us in Roblox. And so I think the most important thing is we are where they are. Even more importantly, we show up how they want us to show up.
Well, I think you're right. It's not something 98% of companies could wake up tomorrow and decide they wanted to start doing. I do think companies, though, can learn to try to move slowly in that direction or as fast as they can. But it would be quite an aspiration to do what you guys have done. Okay, so I tell everybody who will listen what a rock star you are. Who do you look up? Who do you look up to?
You know, we share that in common because it's like gives me goosebumps to even be in a room with you because I've been saying for years that you're my superhero. And I am probably the biggest fan of your Saturday emails, which have been just extraordinary lighthouses for not only me, but for all of us in our organization who read your insights. So thank you for being what I would say is the smartest person in the room.
Oh, that's very awesome.
Other people I look up to, you know, for me, it can't just be one. So I'm going to give you three because I think a combination of head, heart, and soul is what I truly believe in. I think you need all three to make magic happen. On the head front, right now, I'm going to have to say Mike Cesario because we just did a collaboration with Liquid Death that was just explosive in its creativity. And what inspires me about Mike Cesario is how disruptive he is. It's a one-way path of disruption, which is also insight-based. And he's fearless, bold, and unapologetic about that, and really brings a different dimension that other brands, quite honestly, would never have the audacity to do. From a heart perspective, I've been spending a lot of time with Billie Jean King, and she really unleashes an incredible amount of vulnerability. And she's shown us the courage to care. It takes a lot of courage to care and a lot of courage to act on that care with compassionate actions that create movements. And that heart is absolutely fundamental. We like to say at e.l.f. we're a bold disruptor with a kind heart. And both need to be true in how we operate. And I would say on the soul front, that would be Alicia Keys. We're business partners. We created Keys Soul Care together, a brand built with a soul, built to love, built to care, especially from the inside out. And just thinking about how you align your spirit and connect mind, body, and soul is, I think, really how you create things that other people can't see. It's how you have limitless vision and the energy to actually turn those visions into reality.
That's a hell of a list. Okay. So to bring it home, I have five poll questions for you.
Okay. My favorite part. I'm so excited.
Pretty mixed bag. Number one, are you generally a fan of the movie musical genre?
Generally, I am not.
Me neither, which is like heresy in my house because like I've got a daughter at going to college for musical theater. We are season ticket holders to the Broadway series that comes through, but I can't watch it in a movie. Like maybe because I like it so much on stage, it's just, but you know, so 31% of people say not at all. 25% say yes, definitely. And 40% say, quote, in some cases. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm in the no category.
Please tell your daughter to go see Hell's Kitchen if she hasn't already. It is Alicia Keys' Broadway show. I've seen it. It could move me to the Y side of the chart on that one. It is the best Broadway musical that I've ever seen.
Awesome. Hell's Kitchen. Noted. Do you prefer a self-checkout or a cashier when shopping in a store?
Cashier.
Me too. We're in the clear majority there. 69% say cashier. I'm just like an extrovert. I always read their name tag before I get to there so I can, you know, hi, Dolores, right? Like, I just like the human interaction of it. I do.
Yeah, I love humans. And yeah. I think the more and more we are plunged into isolation inside all of the devices and technology we create, the more I yearn for human contact.
I agree completely. Fortunately, a super majority of Americans agree with us on that one. Do you drink coffee, first of all, before I ask the next question? Are you light, medium, or dark roast?
I am dark roast. I love espresso. I listened to your podcast with Diego and was enamored by your coffee conversation. I am one of these people who, if I do not have two shots of espresso before I leave the house in the morning, I will get a caffeine headache. However, I drink it because I love it and I cannot leave, whether it's my house or my hotel room, without two shots of espresso.
I do love espresso. I'm a kind of a medium roast coffee drinker. I only learned, I guess I was one of the late people to learn this, that it turns out lighter roast coffee actually has higher caffeine, which just seemed really counterintuitive to me. But espresso is a whole different ballgame. It's pretty split. 34% say medium, 27% dark, and 24% of people who don't drink coffee, which is strange.
Do you have any sort of correlation between coffee drinkers and some other insight?
You know, it's funny because I have this straight up from our website and it says people who answer medium are much more likely to watch Fox News for most of the time. So I'm a medium drinker. I'm not a Fox News viewer. So sometimes, you know, stats are stats. Do you typically enjoy your favorite part of a meal first or last? So plate of food. Do you tackle the thing you like the most or do you save it till the end?
So I like to create the perfect bite.
Mm.
So I actually mix things together so that I can have an extraordinary sensation at the same time. So I don't know how to answer that question.
No, that's a great answer. Yes, that's a great answer. Because especially if you're not one of those people who can't stand their food to touch, it's like blending them together is the best part of it, right? People are unusually divided on this one. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. Our country today is divided on quite a bit, but pretty evenly divided. Basically, half say they eat it first, or no, a third say they eat it first, a third say they eat it last, and a third say that they're not even sure. I guess they don't think about it. But maybe we'll put that in the camp of those.
Yeah,
of
like I like to smash chips on my sandwich and put the pickles on. Like I want it in And then like if I'm having a bite of steak, I need the French fry at the same time. Like it's got to all be at the same time.
Yeah, I put coleslaw on a pulled pork sandwich instead of having it on the side. That's my big one of my
100% for sure. It all goes on.
Last but not least, how important is it to you, if at all, to have different groups of friends?
Very important. So that goes back to what I said to you earlier about what Issey Miyake taught me, which is spend time with things you don't know. And I love being in groups where, like you, I feel like the dumbest person in the room. I think that's the best place to be. And just being exposed to things that are just not part of my normal or part of my everyday, I find that incredibly stimulating. And that's how I get my oxygen.
And I would say it's also an important ingredient to why you're such a great marketer, because the empathy that you gain from having those different groups of people. That was something of a loaded question. I knew how you were going to answer it, and I knew I would answer it the same way because I am also very keen on, I don't even necessarily think about them as different groups of friends, but a very diverse set of those people. Interestingly enough, though, only 16% of U.S. adults say that it's, quote, very important for them to have different groups of friends, which could partly explain the overall lack of empathy we see in our country all too often. Yeah, 42% say it's not important at all. So they like their one small group, and the insular nation creates the echo chambers and things that cause all the problems we have today, right?
It does. And it's funny because I bet if you ask that question among Europeans or in different countries, you'd get a very different answer. And I think having a global view on things actually dramatically changes your perspective in so many ways and opens the aperture. And I think most Americans don't have a passport. So there's that.
There are a few questions in our database that are more predictive about someone than asking how much they've traveled abroad. It just predicts so many other things about their sociocultural views and everything else. And I realize, look, a lot of people don't have the opportunity to do that, and I understand that, but it is a massive, massive unlock for a lot of people to have that experience elsewhere and relationships with people elsewhere. Well, I saved that question for last because I've just been so grateful to add you to my list of new and different friends over the last couple of years. Really, really appreciate you making the time to do this today. I know you're on an absolute rocket ship. So the fact that you would step off of it for an hour to spend the time with me and our audience today really, really means a lot. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being on the rocket ship with us because you now have a seat on the command deck of the Elf rocket ship. So we appreciate you and all the great work that you do that gives us the insights we need to be the rocket fuel.
Well, it's a blast to be a part of it. Well, Corey, maybe you'll come back sometime if you allow me to invite you again. Sometime we'll be maybe looking at another 5-year run of awesomeness for Elf. And thanks for being an inspirational leader. And I think there's a lot people can learn from your experience and your point of view, even if it's not something they could turn their company on a dime tomorrow and do. There's just a lot of great lessons to learn here. So I hope to see you soon, not on a screen, but in the meantime, good luck with everything and let's stay in touch, okay?
With pleasure, my friend. Take care.
Thanks, Corey.